Go to Daniel. We were in Daniel last time, and we're going to be there again. And we finished in chapter 2, I believe, right? And it says, he interpreted the king's prayers, and the king made Daniel a great man, meaning, he became important, he promoted him, and probably got all the perks. And, and then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego kind of went along with him. So now we're going to go to chapter 5. We're not going to do the whole book of Daniel, obviously, because that would be too much to deal with, because that's not what we're really interested in. We're looking again at men of God and what they do and the characteristics and how they lived their lives and the example they set for us. And Daniel's one of those guys that we spoke about how in the beginning he was taken from his homeland as a young boy. We don't really know how old, but certainly at the very oldest, probably an early teen, but probably earlier, because they wanted to get those young boys and educate them. And basically brainwash them in their system, in their culture, in their religions, in their way of life, in their speech and language and all the other stuff. So he went there, and then he was did the whole thing where he wouldn't eat the food, and he was more handsome and healthy and smart than all the other guys, because he just obeyed God and stuck to what he knew was right to do. So then, of course, we saw about how he interpreted the dream and gets promoted. Now, chapter 5 is down the road, and it's about a guy named Belteshazzar, or Belshazzar. It says, Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Now, obviously, Nebuchadnezzar is no longer there. Belshazzar was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. It calls him, I think, his father or his son, but he was actually his grandson. His father took over, but his father went and was a general and did some conquering in other places, and he put Belshazzar in charge of the city of Babylon. So this guy was full of himself. And it says, Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. He's having a party with his buds. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels, which his father, okay, and that's like, sometimes they refer to somebody as their father, but it's, an ancestor. There's, lots of examples of it. They always referred to Abraham, our father. In the Gospels, they referred to Abraham, our father, the Pharisees, claiming lineage to him, and so on. And that was just a common thing to do. They would refer to him a father, but he was, a forefather. In this case, he's the grandfather. So he brought the silver, gold and silver vessels, which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. We read about these vessels way back in the beginning, and one of the places we read about them is when we looked at the anointed of the Lord. And one of the things we saw was that when they built the temple and they built the Holy of Holies, they anointed everything. And one of the things they anointed was the vessels. They consecrated them, they made them holy. They were special, they were for the service to God. Okay? But these guys took them, Nebuchadnezzar took them and stole them from the temple. And then he put them in a storehouse, and these guys took them out to use them for a drunken party. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the home, out of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In other words, they're using these holy vessels that were consecrated for use to Jehovah, and they're drinking toasts to false idols, the gods of all these different things. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw part of the hand that wrote. What was the guy in Adam's family? Thing? That's what I think about when I read that. You know, a hand. A hand came and wrote on the wall. Wrote on the wall. Now, you know, there's different things in the word we learn about. We learn, you know, what revelation is, you know, where God gives us information, right? He reveals to us. He can do it numerous ways. Well, this would be called...
Phenomena?
Yeah, phenomena, physical phenomena. Because it's not something that is normal. It's out of the ordinary. It goes against the laws of nature, but God produces it to give some information or reveal information. So... The king's countenance was changed, you know, his face changed, right? His countenance, his appearance, it changed. And his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against the other. I'm not sure if that means he soiled himself or not. You know, where it says the joints of his loins, huh?
Says his hip joints.
His hip joints, okay. But he lost control of his body. He just went out of his mind. His knees, you know. Did you ever have, you know, where you get like, what do they call it, sewing machine leg, where your leg bounces up and down? Maybe, you know, you people lose control sometimes when they're in stressful situations. Well, that's what he did. His knees were banging together. His joints or his hips went out of socket. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be third ruler in the kingdom." So he calls the guys, the normal guys like Nebuchadnezzar called, remember, when he wanted his dream interpreted, which they couldn't do. The astrologers and the diviners, you know, the soothsayers, the wizards, all these guys. And he makes in this guy, he says, you know, whoever can figure out what this is, I'm going to enrich him and he'll be powerful and famous and everything else. Verse 8, then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonied or astonished. I mean, he was a different guy. He was visibly shaken. You know, maybe he turned white and, you know, whatever, his eyes bugged out, and who knows? You know, like you see sometimes in the cartoons, where they show a guy, the eyes bug out, and the hair goes up, and he was visibly shaken, and the lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet room, house, and the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, now let thy countenance be changed." She comes in, the queen, and she says, "Whoa, hold on here. Take a step back. Take a deep breath." Verse 11, "There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, thy grandfather, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. You know, he put them over all these guys. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. So she knew about Daniel. She knew about how he had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. Obviously, Belshazzar didn't know anything. He's probably too drunk to remember anything anyway. And he was not a serious guy. He was just a young, spoiled brat, and he was taking advantage of the situation. So, and he was an unbeliever. Then was Daniel brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel, which art of the king of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. So, you know, he says, I called in all these guys that are supposed to know everything, and I made them big promises, and they couldn't do anything. So here you are, Daniel. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and thou shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. He was already had been promoted a couple of times, right? And he was doing pretty well through all these different kings and everything. So, then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself. I don't want your gifts. I don't need your gifts. I'm doing fine as it is. And give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God. You know, they said the spirit of holy gods and different things, small g, because they didn't recognize the God of Daniel. They didn't recognize Jehovah Elohim. So, O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. He says, you know, the most high God, the God that I serve, is the one that gave Nebuchadnezzar all that you are ruling over at this time. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would, he slew, and whom he kept alive, whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would set up, whom he would put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men. And his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was like with the wild asses, and they fed with the grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. So he's given Belshazzar a history lesson. He says, you don't remember about your grandfather, how he tried to glorify himself when he knew that God had done all this for him. And so he ended up like a wild beast in the field for a period of time. You know, and you go and you can read that whole section and know his hair got long and his fingernails and his toenails that were like, you know, an animal's. And he had no clothes on and he was wild, like a wild beast. So he says, and you know, and the lesson of this is you have to give honor and glory to the true God, the high God, the most high God. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thyself, though thou knewest all this. He said, this is available. You were taught this. You knew about this, but you weren't humble. You didn't pay attention. You didn't believe it. But hast lifted thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, of iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Wow, that's a pretty strong accusation. He said, you've worshipped all these fake gods made out of stone, and gold and silver and wood and everything else, and they don't talk, they don't breathe, they don't have any life in them. But the God that's given you life, you have rejected. You haven't given him glory at all. Verse 24. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written. Many, many tekel upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many, or many, however you pronounce it. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a crown of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Okay. So what happened? The empire of Babylon was waning. It was, you know, after Nebuchadnezzar died, his son was a general, but he wasn't a good ruler. And he put his son in charge, and everybody hated his son because he was a jerk. So the people did not like him. And the priests of their religions did not like him. So the Persian Empire, in the meantime, of the Medes and Persians, they had gone together. The Persians had kind of conquered the Medes, and the Medes had been absorbed into their empire, and they were partners. They're expanding their empire. And so they decided to conquer Babylon. Well, Babylon was a gigantic fortified city. I told you, I think, last week, last time we met, the walls were estimated to be 300 to 350 feet high, which is 30 to 35 stories high, and about 80 feet wide, thick. It was self-contained. The river Euphrates ran through it, and where the river came into the city was a gate that came down into the riverbed so nobody could come through. So the Persians diverted the water from the river. Right? So the river ran dry. And then somebody on the inside opened the gate for the Persians at night. They came in, they killed Belshazzar, and they took control of the city. And so then we no longer are dealing with the Babylonian Empire, but now we're dealing with the Persian Empire, or the Mede-Persian Empire. Okay? And Darius was set as king over Babylon. Now there's, we're going to read a couple of different names dealing with the Persian Empire. Cyrus and Darius are the two main ones. Cyrus was a great king and warrior, and Darius was a Mede, and Cyrus put him over Babylon, as far as I understand. So, chapter 6, verse 1. Do I want to tell you anything else about this? Okay. Okay, I read that Darius it says in chapter 9, verse 1, the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes. Ahasuerus is probably not a name, it's a title, like great king. Okay? And so he was made, Darius was made king of the Chaldeans of Babylon at the age of 62. Later, there was another Darius. There was two more Dariuses, Darius I and Darius II, which come up in history. The Medes, or the Medians, were from Media. Makes sense. Today, what is northwest Iran, west of the Caspian Sea. At some point, Cyrus of Ansham defeated the Medes and brought them under control of Persia. And Cyrus was the king of Persia, who Isaiah prophesied of about 175 years before, that he would be the shepherd of God and he would be the anointed and he would deliver Israel back to their homeland. So that's those guys. So now the Medes and the Persians have taken over Babylon. And chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom and 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. You know, he was doing what? As any good manager does, he was delegating authority and power. Right? And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might have accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. So, again, I guess Daniel's reputation preceded him, and Darius recognized talent when he saw it. And, of course, his talent was what? That he believed God and he had the Spirit of God in him. Remember, he started out as a young man, and many years have passed, and now he's here. And this is a long time after he first came to Babylon. And then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents, the princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. So he's the guy underneath Darius, second in charge, and everybody has to answer to him. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. You know, occasion means what? They were trying to find a reason to accuse him or undercut his authority or his power. They wanted to take him down, right? Because they were jealous. They didn't like that he, being a Jew and of the captivity, was over them. So they were jealous. But Daniel was what? He was faithful, he was steady, he was steadfast, and they couldn't find any reason to accuse him. They couldn't find any way to take him down. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So, what do? They say, well, we can't find anything in what he does, the way he does his job, how he serves Darius or the kingdom. So we're going to have to find something that he does where it concerns his God, his religion. Then the presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. They always said that to the king. You know, didn't the king ever think, why do they say that? I'm not going to live forever. I think about that sometimes. They know it's just flattery, right? Because he's not going to live forever. Anyway, all the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the councilors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Okay, now this is an interesting thing. When Nebuchadnezzar was king of Babylon, he was an absolute ruler. Whatever he said went. Remember what Daniel said to Belshazzar, you know, if he decided to give him life, he had life. If he decided to kill him, he kill him. If he decided to promote him, he promote him. If he tried to take him down, he took him down. He was an absolute ruler, and the only law in Babylon really was what Nebuchadnezzar said. The Persians, however, had a different culture. And their culture was that they had rule of law. Okay? They had rule of law. Now, the laws weren't necessarily righteous. The law wasn't necessarily what we would consider great laws, but whatever they made the laws, then people had to stick to it, even the king. So they're going to make this law, and it's what? A law for what? 30 days. Because they don't want this guy to be like God forever. They just want 30 days so that they can catch Daniel. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign in the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. It doesn't change. You know, you can't go back on it. There's no grandfathering of this stuff. There's no exceptions. There's no loopholes. That's it. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went to his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. So, you know, he did what he always did. And even though the circumstances changed, he refused to change. He prayed to his God according to what he believed was right. And 3 times a day, he would go and face Jerusalem and pray to God. And the reason he faced Jerusalem was because they believed that's where the Holy of Holies was, the temple, and that's where God resided. So they would, wherever they were in the world, the Jews would face toward Jerusalem when they prayed. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. You know, this is kind of an easy one. They probably were, you know, staking him out, watching him, seeing what he did. And then they made this law because they knew he did this every day. And then they made the law and then they caught him. So the men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. So, that's what he said. Altereth not. Not going to change. Now, this whole event occurs, and Daniel is pretty old at this point. Bullinger said that he was 89. I'm not sure about his math or how he figured that out, but he had to be probably close to his 80s, if not in his 80s. So he's pretty old at this point. And so they came before the king, verse 12, before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed the decree? That every man shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save thee, O king, shall be cast in the den of lions. The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of Medes and Persians, which altereth not. No loopholes. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. He didn't do it just once. They wanted to seal the deal. They wanted to make sure there was no way out. He did it three times. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. You know, the king realized he got tricked. He realized that they were looking to destroy Daniel, and he tried his very best to find a loophole. He tried to figure out, he probably got his lawyers, and they read over the decree and tried to find a way to get out of it, and nothing happened. So, then these men assembled unto the king and said, unto the king, know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said to Daniel, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. You know, he was, I don't know that he believed it, but Darius wanted Daniel to be saved. He wanted him to be delivered. And he said, your God's going to deliver you, Daniel. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet. And you know that what they would do is they would close it up and they'd pour some melted wax, and he had a signet ring, and he'd imprint the wax so they knew it was the king's seal. And so the king sealed it with his own signet, with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went into the palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. So this king was pretty upset. He didn't even have the dancing girls come in that night. He was so distraught, so upset. He just paced the floor all night, worried about Daniel. And he didn't sleep. Verse 19. Then the king arose very early the next morning, went in haste into the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. You know, like he didn't believe that he would get an answer. You know, oh, Daniel, oh, Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then Daniel said unto the king, O king, live forever. I bet he was shocked when he heard that. When he heard Daniel's voice, I bet it just gave him a little tingle. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O King, I have done no hurt. So, what a great witness, huh? My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of lions. Then was the king exceeding glad for him and commanded they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no matter of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. He believed. He trusted God. He believed God. Tissues. Anyway, he believed his God. Thank you. Let me down here today. He believed his God because he believed his God. So he was taken up out of the den, no manner of hurt. He didn't have a scratch on him, not a single scratch. Verse 24, and the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions have mastery over them and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. How about that? That's quite a turnaround, isn't it? Then King Darius wrote unto all the people, nations, languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in the earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So that's Daniel and the lions then. That's his great deliverance before Darius. So what time do we have? 8:12? Okay. We're going to go to chapter 9. So Daniel started out as a young man. He served Nebuchadnezzar. Then he served Nebuchadnezzar's son. Then he served his his grandson. He got deposed. The Persians took over. And he served Darius as king. And then later on, he served Cyrus, the king of the Persians. Quite a guy. And every time, he came out on top. He was the guy. Now, I wanted to read chapter 9 because this is one of the great things we've seen throughout the Old Testament is that men of God make intercession for God's people. And so Israel's been in captivity in Babylon for 70 years, and God had made a promise to Jeremiah that after 70 years they'd be let free. And Daniel remembers this, and so he goes to God to ask for God's mercy and grace and for deliverance of the children of Israel, the Judah, children of Judah. So, chapter 9, verse 1. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. Again, Ahasuerus is like almighty king, or it's a title. I think the guy's name was actually Astygius or something. Astygnus, something like that. Anyway, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the numbers of years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. So, obviously, Daniel was aware of the writings of Jeremiah and of his prophecies, and that the end of desolations means the end of the punishment for Jerusalem for all the evil they had done turning away from God, especially King Manasseh. Remember, it said that way back. And I set my face unto the Lord God to seek by prayer and supplication with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. So he set his face what? He faced Jerusalem. Faced Jerusalem where the Holy of Holies was, where God was said to reside. And he fasted and he put sackcloth on and ashes, which shows his great humility towards God. That's what they would do to show their humility. You know, sackcloth would be like burlap. You imagine putting on burlap over your bare skin and sitting in ashes. It would be very uncomfortable, to say the least. Plus, not eating. And I prayed unto the Lord my God and made my confession and said, O Lord, the great and dreadful God, keeping the covenant and mercy to them that love him and to them that keep his commandments. We have sinned and have committed iniquity and have done wickedly and have rebelled even by departing from thy precepts and from thy judgments. So right off the bat, Daniel includes himself with the people. He says, we. He doesn't say they, because he was a pretty faithful guy. I mean, he wasn't perfect, I'm sure. I'm sure he made some mistakes, but he wasn't a God rejecter. He didn't put idols in the temple. He didn't promote Baal. He didn't shed innocent blood. He didn't do all the things that all those crazy, nutty people did before him. He was a solid, God-believing, faithful man. But he put himself with them. We have sinned and committed iniquity and have done wickedly and have rebelled even by departing from thy precepts and from thy judgments, departing from thy word, not obeying your word. Neither have we hearkened unto thy servants, the prophets, which spake in thy name to our kings, our princes, our fathers, and to all the people of the land. You know, you sent prophets to help us, to save us, to turn us back, and we didn't listen. O Lord, righteousness belongeth unto thee, but unto us confusion of faces as at this day, to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and unto all Israel that are near and that are far off, through all the countries whither thou hast driven them because of their trespass, that they have trespassed against thee. O Lord, to us belongeth confusion of face, to our kings, to our princes, to our fathers, because we have sinned against thee. He's letting it all hang out here. He's not holding back. To the Lord our God belong mercies and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him. Neither have we obeyed the voice of the Lord our God. And there, that's Lord Jehovah. To walk in his laws, which he set before us by his servants, the prophets. Yea, all Israel have transgressed thy law, even by departing, that they might not obey thy voice. Therefore, thy curse is poured upon us, and the oath that is written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, because we have sinned against him. So, he recognizes, you know, why they were cursed, right? You know, the curse is poured upon us and the oath that is written in the law of Moses. Because if you go back and read in Deuteronomy, Moses foretold this. He said, you know, I'm going to bless you and then you're going to turn away from me because you thought you'd done it all yourself. and you're going to turn to other gods, and you're going to go into captivity, and then you're going to cry to me, and I'm going to deliver you. And it happened over and over. And finally, God got fed up. He says, okay, Jerusalem's going to get destroyed. You're going to be cast out in captivity for 70 years. So, and says, and the oath that was written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, because we have sinned against him. And he hath confirmed his words, which he spake against us and against our judges that judge us, by bringing upon us a great evil. For under the whole heaven hath not been done as hath been done upon Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil is all come upon us. You know, if you go back in Deuteronomy, there's a whole section called the blessings and the cursings. You know, and that's in there. And more. And then even in Jeremiah, when we read, we always read chapter 36 with Jehoiakim. And God tells Jeremiah, says, I'm writing this to give them another chance. They can still turn around and turn back to me. But if they don't, they're going into captivity. You know, the whole reason for the prophets was to call the people back, to give them the word and to call them back to God. And that's what Jeremiah did. And Daniel, he just stood upon the word in Babylon, and he was the guy that just did his best for his people. So verse 12 again, and he hath confirmed his words which he spake against us and against our judges that judge us, bringing upon us great evil. For under the whole heaven hath not been done as hath been done upon Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, you know, Nebuchadnezzar went in a couple of times. He took Jehoiakim away. Then he went back again, and then he wiped out Jerusalem. He knocked down the walls. He knocked down the cities. They burned the temple. It was just left a desolation. If you've ever seen a picture of bombed out cities in Europe after World War II, that's probably what Jerusalem looked like. He just wiped it out when he finished it off. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil has come upon us. Yet made we not our prayer before the Lord our God, that we might turn from our iniquities and understand thy truth. You know, they never turned and asked God. They never prayed for him to help them. He tried, but they didn't listen. Therefore hath the Lord watched upon the evil and brought it upon us. For the Lord our God is righteous in all his works which he doeth, for we obeyed not his voice. And that's a great verse, because why? It says, the Lord our God is righteous. He's righteous. You know, he's a just God. He didn't just do this to the people because he didn't love them. They brought it upon themselves. He kept warning them, if you don't turn back to my word, this is going to happen to you. He tried, and they didn't listen. The Lord is righteous in all his works which he doeth, but we obeyed not his voice. If they'd obeyed, they would have avoided it all. And now, O Lord our God, that hast brought us thy people forth out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand, and has gotten thee renown, as at this day we have sinned, we have done wickedly. O Lord, according to all thy righteousness, I beseech thee, let thine anger and thy fury be turned away from the city of Jerusalem, thy holy mountain, which is where the temple was, because of our sins and for the iniquities of our fathers. Jerusalem and thy people are become a reproach to all that are about us. Now therefore, O our God, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplications, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is desolate for the Lord's sake. O my God, incline thine ear and hear. Open thine eyes and behold our desolations, and the city which is called by thy name. For we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, but for thy great mercies. You know, he says, we're not righteous. We don't deserve this. But for your mercy, that's why we are petitioning and asking and supplicating you. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, hearken and do. Defer not for thine own sake. O my God, for thy city and thy people are called by thy name. And while I was speaking, this is great, while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin, the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in a vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touch me about the time of the evening oblation. Wow. He sent Gabriel, and Gabriel touched him. It's pretty cool. And he had seen Gabriel in a vision previously to this, which we didn't read, but you could read it on your own. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplication, the commandment came forth, and I come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. He said, even when you just started praying, the word came to me, Gabriel, to go and take care of you. You're greatly beloved. Imagine that. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. So then Gabriel tells him, 70 weeks are determined upon the people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublesome times, troublous times. I think the Messiah there, the Prince, refers not to the Christ necessarily, but it may refer to Cyrus, because Cyrus was prophesied of in Isaiah 175 years before as the one that would bring Israel back to Jerusalem, or Judah back to Jerusalem. And he is called the Messiah in that place. And after 62 weeks shall the Messiah be cut off. Now this is about Jesus Christ, but not for himself and the people of the Prince that shall come to destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war of desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. For the overspreading of the abomination he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured out upon the desolate. And it goes on from there. So, you know, he makes this great prayer and supplication for Israel, and then God sends Gabriel to tell him what's going to happen. I'm not really sure about all those prophecies. Some of them you can figure out, but some of them are impossible until they happen. So, and some of them may have a double meaning. So you just never know. But you know, it says in verse 24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity. The word reconciliation there is not really the word reconciliation, it's really atonement. And the difference between atonement and reconciliation is, atonement, it means to make amends, a reparation for the wrongs or sins. In other words, you have to pay for your sins in some way. That's why they would make sacrifices. They would shed blood. Reconciling is to bring back together in agreement. You bring back together. So there's a difference there. Bring back into relationship again. So Daniel was an incredible guy, and he did some great things, and he did some great prophecies, and he stood on the word for many, many, many years. He himself never went back to Jerusalem, but he stood on the word for all those years and many times by himself, and just was faithful to God and was there when God wanted him, and he received many great visions and wrote down prophecies and lived out his life in Babylon. Or actually, I think he also went to the other place where Cyrus was, Shushan, the palace of Shushan, which is where mentioned in the book of Esther. So we're going to stop there. Okay? So...